You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Gray wolves have made a remarkable comeback to California after becoming locally extinct more than a century ago. The number of wolf packs have grown in recent years from a single pack back in 2015 to at least 9 confirmed packs statewide. This resurgence is sparking a passionate debate about protecting this recovering endangered species while also reducing costly losses to livestock. About a week ago, we shared the perspectives of the California Cattlemen's Association, a rancher himself, as well as a professor of livestock and rangeland economics. Today, we're going to continue that conversation about striking the right balance with perspectives from state wildlife officials and conservationists. To begin, we welcome Axel Honeycutt, the state gray wolf coordinator for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Vicky.
Well, I'd love to start with learning more about your job and your responsibilities. What does your job entail as the state gray wolf coordinator?
Yeah, so I am still just a wildlife biologist, but I do coordinate the state's wolf program, which includes population monitoring, research, conflict response, and then also our wolf livestock compensation program. So I am both in the field and at the desk on any given day.
Hmm. So gray wolves became locally extinct more than a century ago. I mean, what can you tell us about why wolves disappeared from California and how they ultimately made their return back to the state?
Yeah, so like most of the Western United States, wolves were extirpated. They were removed by state governments, the federal government, local communities. Throughout the 19th century, there was truly a war on wolves, a movement to lethally remove every single last wolf. And so we know that, at least, you know, based on the state's records, the last wolf in California was killed in 1924 in Lassen County. And so that was the belief of the people at the time, was, you know, the need to remove large carnivores, including the state's, you know, most iconic, the California grizzly bear as well, along those same lines. Jump ahead, you know, 50, 60 years, you know, past 1924, you have the passage of the Endangered Species Act, the environmental movement, and renewed interest in wildlife, environmental, stability and reintroduction of species that were once extinct or were endangered in the U.S. And so, very famously, wolves were reintroduced to Yellowstone and central Idaho in the mid-90s, and very quickly spread into Oregon. And then in 2011, a wolf from Oregon came into California, which was the first wolf recorded in modern times. And since 2015 onwards, we've had consistent presence of wolves in California, again, stemming back from that reintroduction in the Northern Rockies in Idaho and Wyoming and Montana.
Is growing from one wolf pack in 2015 that was confirmed to at least 9 in the state in the last decade, is that a considerable growth for a species like wolves?
No, I wouldn't call it considerable. It is kind of what was expected and projected, and similar to what happened in Oregon when Oregon first had their initial wolf pack. We've kind of followed the same lines. To a certain extent, you know, we expected there to honestly be maybe faster growth because of the population in Oregon doing quite well. However, we are sort of at, when you look at the map coming from the Northern Rockies down, we're at the very end of the dispersal pattern, if you will, of those animals. And so it has taken a while for more and more Oregon wolves to come into California. But now that we do have a stable moving towards a stable population, there's, you know, the wolves that are reproducing in California are staying and often going back to Oregon as well.
The state has a wolf plan, and I believe the state's plan is now in phase 2. For the layperson like myself, what would you like people to better understand about the state's responsibility in both wolf conservation and management in California?
Yeah, it's a difficult balance between the fact that wolves are listed as an endangered species, both in under the California Endangered Species Act and then federally under the Endangered Species Act as well. And so there is the mandate from that listing that wolves need to be protected, and their conservation is part of the mission of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife as it is with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And so we work very closely with our federal partners on that. At the same time, as you mentioned, there are 9 packs, which is about, 50 to 70 wolves in the state that we have, minimally counted in the last year or so. And yet such a small number of wolves can still, have a considerable impact to namely livestock producers. The conflict that we've seen from just a handful of packs, not all the packs have been recorded to be in conflict, but we do know that all the packs that we know of in California occur and overlap to a certain degree with livestock operations, particularly in the northeastern part of the state. And so it's a very difficult balance between protecting them as an endangered species and the, the management actions that could occur or need to occur in order to try to mitigate that conflict.
When it comes to responding to mitigate conflict, when we had the Cattlemen's Association on, the president of that association, who is a rancher himself in Sierra and Plumas counties, said that ranchers need more tools or they need more leeway to address problematic wolves. What tools are currently available?
Yeah, the main tools that, we distribute ourselves, help ranchers put in place or promote are things like range riding, turbo flaggery, which is a type of fencing, noise and light and sound makers. And, these are they're what we would classify as non-lethal tools. These are tools that largely play into the wolves' innate behavior to react to anything new in its environment. However, those tools, do have limitations. There's no silver bullet in the toolbox of wolf management and conflict mitigation. However, those are the main tools that we can use as they are an endangered species. There are other tools, less than lethal tools, in terms of pyrotechnics, beanbag rounds, rubber bullets, things like that. Those are things that we are currently working with, our local county and other state officials and our federal partners to see how we can implement those on the ground. But that's still something that's a work in progress and something that was only allowed in phase 2, which we came into a year ago in 2025.
I mean, you're listening to many stakeholders when determining the best plan for management and conservation of gray wolves. Do you think that as gray wolves continue to recover here in California and return, do you think there might need to be a change as to how ranching is done in the state to cut down on these encounters?
Well, that you're absolutely right. That is the other side of this, is that, we can prescribe and advise and even, fund or provide some of these non-lethal tools. But sometimes what is, more effective or needs to be done in conjunction with those tools are changes in how ranches operate, husbandry practices. But those come down to the individual ranch and business. And it's very difficult for myself or the state as a whole to be prescriptive and, particularly tell someone how to run their operation. So we do try to, work towards that, but I do think that that is ultimately part of, the long-term solution. And when you look at wolves in other parts of the West, where they've been there for decades longer, that is where we have seen some success, is, ranchers or livestock producers that make those changes. But those often come with very difficult decisions, particularly financially, and also need to ideally be done on a landscape level or a community level to be effective. If one ranch is doing something right or implementing a more advanced technique, it doesn't mean that wolves are suddenly going to leave.
Axel Honeycutt is the state gray wolf coordinator for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Thank you so much for joining us, Axel.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're listening to more perspectives surrounding the return of gray wolves to California and the conflicts that are emerging with ranchers. Now I want to bring in Amarouk Weiss. She is a senior wolf advocate for the Center of Biological Diversity. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you have been doing work centering around wolves for almost 30 years. So you have a lot of experience in this. What is your perspective on how California has managed the returning wolf population?
Yeah, Vicky, so my background is a biologist and a former lawyer. So when I'm thinking about wolves in any state, including in California, I'm looking at what's happening with wolves and with people and the agency and the people who are living where wolves are moving into through both of those lenses. What's going to work for wolves biologically? What's going to work policy-wise? What is the legal foundation playing field that we're working on? And so I was actually part of the stakeholder group that helped this agency develop its state wolf plan back through 2012 through 2016. And at that time, the agency brought together stakeholders from very diverse backgrounds, conservation groups, ranchers, and hunters, and the agency staff as well. And we all provided input on what we thought needed to be in a plan to make things work for wolves and to make things work for the people that are living where wolves are. And I think overall, it's actually been a really substantially very good plan. It is packed full of some of the most recent science on exactly all of those topics, and it also reflects a lot of the social values that people have around wolves. I think that any time that wolves are coming into a state for the first time in 100 years, there's going to be challenges because humans don't like change. You know, this is the nature of the world. This is the nature of our planet, right? That is what life is all about. It's change. And so how we adapt to change is going to be a reflection of how willing we are and if we make it work. And I do believe we can make it work. I think that we are only limited by our willingness and our imaginations.
When we had the Cattlemen's Association on the show, you know, one of the main arguments that the president was making was that ranchers need more resources to help combat the threat of wolves. I mean, particularly when it comes to non-lethal responses. He was talking about, you know, calves and cows can become stressed. There can be low birth rates. Of course, wolves can attack livestock as well. I mean, you're hearing a lot of arguments and perspectives surrounding striking the right balance. What stands out to you about this rancher's perspective, this association's perspective?
Yeah, I think for the general public, what I would like to stand out is to have context for this. So I think most of the public does not know that the U.S. Department of Agriculture has a statistics service, and they survey ranchers and farmers across the country, and they put out reports. And those farmers and ranchers report what are their death loss causes for their livestock. Most of the public is completely unaware that 90 to 95% of cattle and calf losses across the country in states with wolves and without wolves are due to things that have nothing to do with predation of any kind. 90 to 95% of livestock losses are due to things like dehydration, starvation, birthing complications, ingesting poisonous weeds, respiratory infections is a big killer of livestock. And so when you put that into context, you realize that in California, where we have 5.8 million combined cattle and calves and sheep and lamb, every year, tens of thousands of livestock die from all of these other causes combined. Of the 5 to 10% of causes that are due to predators, wolves certainly aren't at the top. I mean, we're talking about wolves, bears, cougars, coyotes, eagles, all kinds of things will prey on livestock. Domestic dogs. Most people don't realize that in states with wolves, dogs running loose in the country cause five times the losses of livestock that wolves do. So I think it's first important to understand that full context, okay? Once you have that context, it's like we have a container, and we can both appreciate that, at the same time appreciate that individual livestock owners are suffering stressful situations with wolves, and they're not prepared when wolves come in. And to that point, I guess I would say, you know, livestock raising is a commercial operation. It is a business. And I've owned a small business before. I'll speak from experience. The first rule of a successful business is you change with the changing times. This gets back to that whole idea before about life is all about change. And so we got our first wolf in California in 2011. We got our first wolf pack confirmed in 2015. In Plumas County, they got their first wolf pack confirmed in 2017, their next one in 2021, their next one in 2023. So all along, there's this building body of awareness. And what we do know from across the country about ranchers who are successfully living with wolves is the most important thing to do is to be proactive. Don't wait until conflicts start. Start putting into place some conflict prevention measures to begin with, because even though livestock wolf conflicts are rare, once they happen, it gets to be too late if you haven't put something into place. So common sense practices like hauling away the carcasses of your livestock that have died from other causes. You want to haul them away or bury them or burn them so they're not drawing in wolves or other predators. If you have sheep, you want to have livestock guardian dogs with their sheep. And I am aware of a number of ranchers in a number of the counties where wolves are residing in California that have increased the number of livestock guarding dogs they have and are having success with that. The tools that Axel talked about, those are like very specific tools like fencing and lights. And as he said, those may have a limited lifespan, but it may be that you only need protection during a really vulnerable period of time, like when you're calving or lambing. That's when you should have them in night pens so that you are protecting them. Having human presence around on a regular basis is also a really good idea. And then, because a lot of this is like community oriented, it's not just individual ranchers, it's ranchers within a county, within a valley, combining your efforts to work together. So for instance, seeing if you can birth your calves all at the same time. So you don't have a rancher birthing a calves now, and 2 months later, more calves, and 2 months later, more calves. If you can control that birth pulse, you can time it to when elk and deer are having their fawns and their calves so that wolves have more wild prey to go after. And that way you decrease your vulnerability. There's some people that are even talking about different breeds of cattle. For instance, having longhorn breeds of cattle again. And in other countries, those have been really successful in warding off wolf attacks. So again, we're limited only by our imagination. There's a whole host of tools that we can be using and strategies.
Given that you were one of the stakeholders that helped develop the state's wolf plan with California Department of Fish and Wildlife, I mean, I imagine you talked and listened to a lot of different perspectives on this issue. What kind of conversations are organizations like yours, the Center for Biological Diversity, having with state officials, with ranchers, and is there any common ground between these different parties?
I think there's a lot of common ground. And again, this is something the public might not know. So I'm going to cite to a study that just came out last fall from Michigan Technological University, where they interviewed people across the country to see how they felt about keeping wolves federally protected. Because many people think there's this huge divide on that. Not at all. What the study showed is across the country, 78% of the public supports continued federal protections for wolves. For every one person that strongly opposes continued protections, 9 people strongly support it. And then breaking it down into groups that you wouldn't think would support wolf protections, people who self-identified as ranchers and farmers, 79% of them support continued wolf protections. And in the states that have wolves specifically, rural residents there supported wolf protections at 75%. So right there, that's a huge amount of common ground. And that goes back to what Axel was talking about, how we had this social consciousness awakening that it was so important to protect our environment that we passed the Endangered Species Act. At the same time, we passed the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act, because I think most people realize that human health and well-being is intrinsically related to the health and well-being of nature.
Amaruk, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Amaruk Weiss is the senior wolf advocate for the Center for Biological Diversity, and we've been listening to more perspectives surrounding the return of gray wolves to California and the conflicts that are emerging with some ranchers. This is an ongoing conversation on Insight. Earlier this month, we shared a ranching and a rural economic perspective as well. Still ahead, the 2026 Newbery Award winner for children's literature is speaking in Davis in Sacramento this week. She'll join us to share the inspiration behind her award-winning book, All the Blues in the Sky. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.